Lucindo Rodriguez III is a prisoner in Texas. If the state has its way, he'll be dead within the hour. This is Execution Watch. Huntsville, Texas, death penalty capital of the Western world, where prison staff is preparing to put Rodriguez to death by injecting him with a deliberate drug overdose. During the next hour, KPFT's Execution Watch will broadcast live coverage of the killing in Texas, the state responsible for more than a third of all U.S. executions. Execution Watch host Ray Hill, with criminal defense attorneys Larry Douglas, Mike Gillespie, Jack Lee, and Paige Yanni. Huntsville reporters outside the death house, Linda Huhan and Danny Graham. The Execution Watch for Rosendo Rodriguez III begins.
Good evening. Tonight is March 27th, 2018. I am Ray Hill. I am the host of Execution Watch. Tonight they plan to kill Rosendo Rodriguez III. He is pictured on our website in his United States Marine Corps uniform. We have a call coming in from hello, Linda. Linda, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well. What's going on in Huntsville?
Well, nothing right now. No one's crossed the line. There's about 20 of us out here with our signs, you know, and we're getting a whole bunch of honks tonight, which we never have had before.
Really?
That they agree with what we've got our signs say. You know, honk if you want the death penalty to end.
Okay, do you know of anything pending? I am told by Elizabeth that the Supreme Court has handed down a decision a half hour ago indicating that all processes are now complete.
Okay, we haven't heard that yet. Danny's watching the Supreme Court and she says she hasn't seen anything yet, but, I will ask her.
Okay, usually Elizabeth's reports are verifiable, but if you hear anything, if nobody's crossed the roads, there's something cooking somewhere.
Did they come across, Elizabeth said that the Supreme Court said it's over now. They ruled 30 minutes ago. No, she said she hasn't seen it.
Okay, so if nobody's crossing the road, that means that something somewhere is pending.
Right, because nobody's crossed.
Ray? Ray, I've got a...
they're coming out now. They're crossing the road right now.
I've got an email that says the habeas was denied.
Okay, the habeas denied, and Linda reports that the witness...
Coming out.
Go ahead, Linda. Linda?
Yes.
Go ahead.
They're crossing over the line right now, or crossing over to the wall.
Okay, and these are the media or the witnesses?
That's the media, yes.
Okay, the media is going over. Now, when the media crosses the road, soon to be followed by the witnesses for Rosendo,
yes.
That's the full picture, and that does not happen until he is on the gurney and prepared.
Okay, yeah, just the last, his priest is going in. He's the last one going in after the media.
Okay, Linda, keep us informed of what happens up there.
I will call you back.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, no, they never do waste much time in the process. If it's over 30 minutes ago, then that means the procedure begins on time. And the procedure has begun on time. Mike, what happened in this case?
Well, it seemed like in 2005, some workers at a city dump found a suitcase in the dump with a body in it. The body was a girl named Baldwin, who they later found out was a prostitute. They also later found out that she was working undercover with the feds on a counterfeiting ring. When they found her body, they did some checking, and they found that her credit card had been used to buy a suitcase that matches the description of the one that her body was in. They also found the credit card was used to rent a motel room by a guy named Rodriguez. They then tracked down that man to the defendant and arrested him in San Antonio. So what they have right now is they have a man who claimed that he hired a prostitute, and there was a fight, and in the fight, she attacked him, and his Marine training made him attack her and kill her. Based upon that, he got a lawyer.
Did he confess right away?
He confessed within 30 days.
Within 30 days.
And in his confession, he agreed. That's what he stated. They also, at that time, suspected that there might be another body in that dump on somebody who was missing. And they cut a deal that if he gave them information about this second killing that they thought he might have been involved with, that they would take the death penalty off the table. They would give him life in prison, and he could take a plea. He agreed to that. He gave the statement. They also gave him immunity on the second homicide of the second girl if they found it. All that goes according to script. All that, they go to court, and at court, his lawyer then tells the judge that his client, the defendant, now does not understand anything, is confused, and doesn't want to go ahead with the deal. So with that, the attorney withdraws of the case, and he now gets two court-appointed lawyers. We have many issues to talk about that, but in terms of chronological history, he then went to trial. At the trial, they then elevated the case from life in prison to capital murder, and they used the reason for the capital murder that he committed the murder while he committed a sex crime. Now, that's in spite of him making a confession saying that he hired a prostitute. They said it's a sex crime. They also threw in the allegation that it's a capital murder because he killed more than one person during a criminal episode. And the second person wasn't the body in the suitcase because they had no evidence of that besides his confession. The second person was her unborn fetus that she was pregnant with. Based upon that, during his trial, they were able to bring into evidence and show the pictures of the unborn fetus as he supposedly killed.
That's pretty dramatic.
Pretty dramatic, and the jury quickly came back with a death penalty verdict on that. Upon appeal, that second grounds for the unborn fetus was reversed because under Texas law, you cannot murder somebody who's not born yet, and so therefore can't be murder. So the end result is a crime in which the state thought was fair, life in prison with no parole, because he rejected it, they now escalated to charges that the appellate court they couldn't bring, and they brought in pictures that they couldn't bring in, and all this evidence made him get the death penalty on the original case, well, in which they didn't want the death penalty.
Well, Mike, did there seem to be any evidence other than his statement that he was seeking the services of a prostitute, which puts him in a hotel?
Well, they didn't say anything, but what I thought was interesting is they tracked him down to a motel that he used with the prostitute's credit card.
Okay.
So it seems to me that if he used the prostitute's credit card, it seems like there was some consent to use the room with the prostitute.
No, but at the point he uses the credit card for the motel room, but she's still alive.
We don't know. On the record, it would seem that, which is why I'm bringing it up, but it could be that he bought the suitcase afterwards, he rented the room afterwards, but they present the evidence that he had the credit card so that he knew her.
Now, he at one point claimed she attacked him. Why did he think she attacked? What was his opinion of her motivation for attacking him?
I didn't pick up any reason for the attack. I'm assuming it's about money and about services.
Well, you know, money and services can go a long way before it gets to violence.
Well, the question becomes, is it's not a sexual assault. Now, there is some evidence in the case that there might have been some damage to the vagina during sex, but does that make it a sex crime? I don't know. To me, if she's a prostitute and they're in the motel room and the murder happened in the motel room, it wasn't like he picked her up on the street in a car and attacked her. They were in a motel room together. I think there's many explanations. And these are issues that should have been raised at the trial.
Well, as a general rule, I don't think that prostitutes use their credit cards to get the motel room with their Johns. I think they kind of expect the Johns to pay for that.
I agree with that. So therefore, you can make the assumption that he rented the room after he murdered her, so therefore it would be no relevant to this.
We've got a couple of theories to get to capital punishment. Kill one person at the same time killing another person. Oops, we can't use that because the other person is not a person yet. Therefore, it doesn't play. So that leaves a default judgment that we got to find another crime here. So let's make it sexual assault. And the problem with that is that she's a professional. And just because there's some scratches and abrasions here and there. Some people do that rougher than others, I presume. The thing about it, well, see, I'm a very gentle soul, Johnick. So, no broomsticks for me. The thing about it, I'm a gentle soul, so I don't know how rough some of this can get. But the situation is, I'm not entirely convinced that we have reached the criteria for a capital case.
Which is, I agree with you. It seems to me more like they didn't think it was a capital case. They offered him life without parole in prison, and when he rejected it, they escalated to
a capital case. Well, life without parole is a capital offense. It just takes a long time to get there. Yannick, you want to weigh in on this?
Oh, my.
Come on in.
Yes, sir. Okay. Let's see. First, they being the Lubbock County District Attorney's Office, charged him specifically with two different ways of committing capital murder. And that's not unusual. This was done after the initial plea bargain was rejected. And actually, he had been charged with capital murder, offered the plea bargain. He rejected the plea bargain on the plea hearing date. And not unlike many district attorneys located around the state of Texas, when you reject a plea deal, they're loath to let you have it ever, ever again.
And that may happen more frequently in Lubbock, Texas. Well, and it happens in Georgetown, Texas.
It happens in Harris County every day, too. So, I mean, if a defendant walks away from a signed plea...
I've seen judges get their pantyhose in a twist over that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, they get their pantyhose in a twist over the fact that the plea bargain might have been offered in the first place.
And they could get rid of this off the docket.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden
or
it's quiet as their, interruptus.
Or the fact that all of a sudden the plea that they had so much counted on is suddenly just gone. Oh, my Lord, it's gone. And they're going to have to try this capital murder. And this is Lubbock. Lubbock does try capitals. I mean, every county in the state of Texas tries capitals at one point or another. But I can tell you that there are fewer capitals tried in Lubbock County than there are in Harris County.
Yeah,
there are fewer capitals tried in Lubbock County than
Dallas
County.
They've got fewer bodies laying around than we do.
Well, I tend to think that that very well may be true as well. Yes. Okay. So the prosecutors were not willing to reoffer the plea deal that they had offered before, when he decided that he had an issue about competency, as I recall. His attorney had an issue about whether or not he was actually competent when he was rejecting the plea deal. And, I mean, if I had been his attorney, I might have questioned his competence.
Yeah, but see, I don't think people look at this that way. I think people look at these cases as if it's all a matter of guilt or innocence and accepting responsibility or not. But actually, there are other factors that are involved, like the, how many hours did the lawyer put into coming up with this plea deal?
Oh, and the fact that he, she, it was offered life without parole, and you know we'll take death off the table, and then his client there is.
I think we have another call. Is that call? Or, no, it's not for us. It's
okay. The frequently,
producer's in a conversation with
frequently, it, even though defense attorneys attempt not to, defense attorneys get their feelings hurt that they have worked as hard as they have to come out with the very best result for their on behalf of their client. And then their client suddenly decides that all the work they've done, all the hours they've put in.
Yeah, but it's the client that's going to sit in that until he rots.
And that is true. But if your focus is saving the client's life and you have worked out a deal to save the client's life, I think is the reason that the attorney said that I can no longer work on this case. I mean, I'm certain that there must have been some residual feelings of confusion and anger on the part of the lawyer that he had worked out what he saw as his client's salvation, and then the client.
Yeah, but suppose I'm the defense lawyer.
Yes.
And I am there, and this has happened. I know, because I'm the defense lawyer, that the first appellate lawyer that's going to get this case in their hand is going to say that I am totally incompetent and can't do my job.
Yeah, ineffective assistance of counsel.
That is the first flag that's going to go up.
That is the textbook complaint on a capital case.
Yeah, ineffective assistance of counsel.
Yes.
Which is what the whole appeal was about. Nobody appealed the main issue to me, and the main issue to me is, why is this a death penalty case? To me, this is an anti-death penalty show. Our focus is supposed to be, why the death penalty? To me, a death penalty fact should be so clear that it's a death penalty case from day one, it's always a death penalty case, and there's no debate, it's a death penalty case. The fact that the state got off the death penalty, that's not a bargaining chip. When you're talking about 15 years versus 10 years, taking a plea bargain to save some time is one thing. But this is a death penalty case. A death penalty case, a person who might be innocent can be in a situation where he gets scared and pleads guilty to life in prison when he didn't do it because he doesn't want to die.
Mike, will you give me the possibility that there may have been a sexual assault, and if there was sufficient proof to make that, this would be a death penalty case?
I don't see it.
You don't see the sufficiency of evidence?
Well, the only thing I see that says there might be a sexual case is evidence that there might have been abrasions or bruises of a sexual nature on a vagina. Well, without being...
Was there any mention of DNA in this case?
No. No, not that I saw.
No, and I saw nothing.
And there's no other forensics.
Was even test run, as far as you know?
I have no
idea. We don't see it.
We don't. If there were run and there was there,
I have. I have no idea. I think.
Go ahead. My trouble with abrasions is you're talking about a prostitute. Maybe she wasn't in the mood. Maybe the abrasions is part of the job, like calluses to a construction worker. There's no evidence.
That brings up a whole bunch of things that I don't know if we reach the depth of. But Larry, where are you going to come in here?
Well, Ray, I think the case raises, to me, two important points that are raised in pretty much all of these cases. One is prosecutorial discretion. The law allows the prosecutor a great deal of discretion in deciding how to plead and try a case. Mm-hmm. And capital murder, aggravated assault, theft are defined by certain statutory criteria. And the prosecutor can decide how to go about pleading the case, how to go about trying the case. So it happened that capital murder requires there are several specific ways of going about doing that. And that is the killing of more than one person in the same episode, mm-hmm. which was pursued here.
Yeah.
And the killing that occurred during the course of another
crime.
They pursued both of those. One got washed out, the two killings, but the one regarding...
But it's not, Yannick told me, it was not unusual for them to double file like this.
Not unusual for security reasons, but the DA can decide to put what they want on the table in terms of capital murder and seeking the death penalty.
Surely the DA knew the state of case law.
The DAs typically will... At least in, well, oftentimes, DAs, from my perspective, overcharge anyway. You know, starting from the lowest to the highest. They will charge you with a lot more than they might even be able to prove. So in this case, they charged him with capital murder. The other thing is, as a lawyer, I think it's very important. The communication between a lawyer and a client is so critical in terms of what the lawyer can do for the client. But the client has control. So Rodriguez had three sets of lawyers. Okay, first lawyer was a well-respected lawyer, also named Rodriguez, who sat with him during an oral examination by law enforcement. And he, I think, saw one reporting saying he gave a recorded statement. It was a confession. Okay, he confessed not only to the killing of Summer Dawn, Baldwin, but there was another similar killing that was done in terms of a young lady by the name of Rogers, I believe. They suspected him of that too, and he confessed. Okay, to one the killing of Summer Dawn, but in his statement under oath. Confession, he says that yes, I killed Summer Baldwin.
But that didn't come in.
Okay, I'm just saying that, yeah. that was the evidence that's the confession he
so
gave.
So the DA had somewhere to go if this failed.
He had somewhere to go when he said that he confessed to the killing, and his claim was that he killed her in self defense. Okay, that was his statement. But then,
in other words, his so-called confession was an excuse mechanism, trying to cover his doing what he did.
And he was he was eager to give a statement. I'm told that he was eager to give
a
statement.
With him?
Yeah.
He had a lawyer with him, also Rodriguez, but no relation. But Mr. Rodriguez was right there with him, and then for some reason. After the statement under oath, confession, was given, he ended up getting another lawyer by the name of Blackburn. Blackburn then goes to the prosecutor and works out a deal, mm-hmm. saying, if you guys take death off the table, he worked out a deal for a life sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the deal is worked out. And once the deal is worked out, then Rodriguez confesses to Rogers' murder. Okay? And he is also allowed to... And Rogers was murdered and also found in... Her body was found in landfill, the Lubbock landfill, just as Baldwin's body was found.
Okay.
So now they've got two murders. And they suspect him of some other things. But despite all that, what his lawyer, Mr. Blackburn, does is convinces the DA to take death off the table and to let him plead to life. So this is what he apparently now is seeking, that is taking death off the table. So he had it already. And after having it already, for some reason, he decides, not only do I He never says, I don't want that. He says, I don't understand anything.
Okay, so the claim before the bench at the point of taking a plea is minus obi.
Correct.
Exactly. So now, at this point, his lawyer, Mr. Blackburn, and I have no idea what went on between Rodriguez and Blackburn at the time, but I suspect, having
certainly
been there a few times, in terms of talking to a client about what's getting ready to happen, and he's got, as the country boy says, a bird's nest on the ground for what he's looking for.
Yeah.
We got it all ready, and all you have to do is go through and sign these papers and go through the plea deal. Then all of a sudden, Rodriguez starts having a claim of, I don't understand anything. I don't understand anything.
And now, under those circumstances, the judge cannot accept that plea.
Well, no judge has to accept any plea.
Yeah.
Okay, so the judge is not going to accept any plea that is not voluntarily made. But even a voluntarily made plea, the judge can reject the plea,
sure,
if he wants
the judge,
to.
You got the power.
But at this point, not only is there no voluntary plea, there's no plea at all. Because you can't, pleas have to be knowingly and voluntarily made. And he's saying, I don't understand anything. Now, I have, destroys the relationship between Rodriguez and his lawyer, Mr. Blackburn. And so Mr. Blackburn says, Judge, I've never, in my many years of practice, I've never had any of this happen to me ever before.
Is that credible? I mean, don't you happen to lawyers regularly?
It happens to me from time to time. Mr. Blackburn says, Judge, and Blackburn then withdraws. And when Blackburn withdraws, then the court appoints Mr. Strangle and Mr. Wardrop to represent him. And at this point, the DA, as he is allowed to do, puts the death penalty back on the table.
We're going to trial under the death penalty, right?
Yes, because the plea bargain agreement,
sure,
that they had worked under was never executed.
So we're back to square one.
Correct.
Here's my question. Why wasn't the confession introduced into evidence as the second murder that he was in? Why did they bring in the fetus that was later reversed? If they had evidence that he committed the second murder of the girl, if the second girl was in a suitcase,
that would have been more valid than the fetus.
That would have been more valid than coming in with the fetus. Mm-hmm. Now, my question to you is, doesn't a confession got to be corroborated? The fact that they said, we think there's another suitcase in that dump and we think you put it there, and he said, okay, and where's the corroboration that confession could come in? If the confession could not come in and the fetus is out, don't we have to prove future dangerousness? What we have is a man who basically kills a prostitute. Where does that any evidence of future dangerousness? They talk about they thought he might have committed five more, but there's no evidence to it.
Well, there's a bunch of, and I don't know whether it's just characteristic of Lubbock, but there's a bunch of hoops that are jumped here. First place, why would the DA make a dead-end, sure-lost run on the fetus?
That's right.
When the case law is readily available.
Because he needed a capital crime, and I don't think he had a capital crime.
And so then the fallback thing was the sexual assault thing, and
I think that's weak.
And at best, that's iffy. I mean, presumably the suitcase was bought after the victim was killed, presumably.
Presumably.
Unless, I mean, and it may be a pattern of action that he did the same thing in the other homicide case. So I don't know. We don't have enough evidence on that because that was never tested out. And so I don't know if sufficiency of evidence seems to be paramount in this case. Well, what did the appellate court say? What was the basis of the
what
appeal?
What I think is that the DA was upset when he rejected the plea, and so he escalated on his own to a capital murder.
It was already a capital.
I know, but the fact that he... Again, capital should be clear. If you're not clear, it's not a capital. I think he knew he might not be able to prove capital, and he brought in the fetus just to bring in the photographs of the dead... Why would they bring into evidence the photographs of a dead fetus except to enrage the jury about this guy?
That worked.
It worked. That, I think, made it a capital. That's why they... But the appellate court...
The DA knew at the time he introduced those photographs that you have to be born alive to be murdered.
So why did he do it? Why didn't he bring the other girl in the suitcase? What I'm saying is I don't think it was a capital
offense.
Maybe
he didn't have sufficient evidence in that other case.
That's what I'm saying. It wasn't a capital.
Well, what did the appellate court say about all this? Were the appellate lawyers carrying their responsibility?
Everything that I read in the appellate had to do with a stock appellate on a death penalty basis. It's all got to do with Strickland and inefficiency of counsel. That's what everybody writes about.
Well, every appellate case begins with insufficiency of trial lawyers.
But nobody's talking about what we're talking about.
No.
I don't know why not. To me, these are good questions.
Now, one more time so that the audience knows what we're talking about here. There are direct appeals. You get convicted of a capital case, and there's automatic direct appeals. And basically, those appeals are, was this case tried correctly? What mistakes did the court make? What mistakes did the prosecutor make in pursuing these cases? Do you know on what level of appeals the fetus part of it got kicked out?
I saw a good page.
The direct appeal.
Was on the direct appeal.
So
the direct appeal picked up that there was an error.
Yes.
In basing capital case on the murder of somebody who had not been born alive.
Well, that wasn't the ground for rejecting that, but the end result was that the issue concerning the fetus was dismissed on direct appeal.
Okay, not the display of the fetus remains.
No, sir.
But was that element in and of itself was rejected?
What was rejected was the legal basis of a death, a capital murder of a death of the fetus. They alleged two different means.
Yeah, I understand that. We've been through that. The other means, of course, is a sexual assault means.
Correct.
And that was the one left standing at the end of the direct appeal.
Correct.
And to address your issue, part of the habeas corpus was that his lawyer did not object to those photographs coming in of the fetus.
Really?
That was part of the ineffective of counsel, that he didn't object to it. But it was not...
Even if he didn't object to it, it was still allowed to be an issue raised on appeal?
To me, that should have been at least kept out because it's just so gruesome. And I'm just...
Well, I know. See, there you are being a criminal defense lawyer again, Mike. The deal is the only reason for introducing that evidence is to shock and awe the jury.
That's correct. And the fact
that... Larry, do you agree with that?
Well, the ineffective argument, okay, of counsel, if you're saying that the counsel's failure to object to the introduction of the fetus evidence has to be... That action is reviewed for ineffective assistance of counsel. On the grounds of what was the lawyer's performance substantially subpar?
Okay.
And if that is found to be true, then you have got to determine whether but for the subpar performance on the lawyer, the result would have been different. In this case, he would not have been convicted. Okay. And so the appellate court, when seeking to decide that issue, has to determine, it's a what difference would it have made?
Okay, so in this case, since introducing the death of a fetus as justification for the capital case, not allowing that in would have changed the elements.
Yeah, and the court would have to make the determination that if the lawyer failed to object, one, would that objection have been sustained?
Yeah.
And had that objection been made and been sustained, would that have made a difference in the outcome?
Would a criminal defense lawyer leave that on the table for an appellate matter?
The appellate review would be based on the lawyer's performance. Okay, and appellate courts give lawyers' performances a lot of deference.
No, I walked out, the
lawyer, was that part of his trial strategy?
Walked out of courtrooms and had the lawyers tell me, well, I've built in enough error here that the appeals have a greater likelihood of being successful.
Okay, saying that building in error would be error that the court, through the prosecutor, committed.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you, but the, you build in error, okay, by objecting.
Yeah.
Okay, and if you objection.
It's in the record.
There's got to be an adverse ruling to you in order for there to be an objection, in order for there to be an error built in. So if you object to it and the court lets it in anyway. Then that's adverse to you. So that's building an error for the.
I want to correct myself. The lawyer did object. He just objected on the grounds they were prejudicial and inflammatory. The complaint was he should have objected based on relevancy. So the lawyer did make an objection. The ineffective sense of counsel.
Get closer, Michael.
He had the wrong objection.
He objected, but he had the wrong objection.
Yeah, prejudicial, inflammatory.
Now, does that open the window for the direct appellate court to look at that?
The appellate court would have looked at it, and they would have made the decision if it's looked at on an ineffective assistance of counsel basis, then you say the lawyer objected based on the evidence being
inflammatory
and prejudicial, which is a good objection.
It's a good objection.
And that objection were overruled, then that's an adverse ruling to him. So the adverse ruling
We can get there on the direct appeal.
It gets to the appellate court, but then the appellate court has to decide, was this ineffective or not? And the appellate court looks at the lawyer's performance and says, was that substantially subpar? And it was not.
What's the distinction, I know legally, but prejudicial relevance, those are really close to the same terms.
I think they're significantly different. I think in this case the evidence was prejudicial.
Yeah, clearly you look at those pictures, and that really burns into the minds of the jury.
If this is a case of murder of an infant, if there's such a thing, murder of a fetus. Then irrelevant is not even a good objection.
But to be more specific, the appellate courts ruled that there was no evidence he knew that she was pregnant. Not the unborn. I mean, unborn life is a legal theory, but there was no evidence he knew she was pregnant. So you can't intentionally and knowingly murder somebody you don't know is even alive.
You don't know exists.
And everything goes back to me to the same argument that this is a prosecutor elevating something that he once thought was not a death penalty to be a death penalty case because he got personal.
Okay, that washes out in the direct appeal. The fetus theory has washed out in the direct appeal. And then there are a series of appeals called writ appeals. How did that go? What happened in the writ appeal?
That's the writ of habeas corpus we're talking about. Inefficiency of counsel. That's what we've been talking about.
Oh, I thought we were talking about direct appeal.
Well, the same issues. It came up in the direct appeal on the issue of prejudice and inflammatory.
Okay. And the court said that don't work, so that leaves us with the sexual assault appeal. Was that issue ever discussed in any appeal? the sufficiency of the evidence of a sexual assault. Was that ever discussed?
No, because it really was not momentous once the sexual assault was thrown out on the direct appeal. Whether or not there...
No, the sexual assault was not thrown out on direct appeal. The fetus was thrown out on the direct appeal.
Well, excuse me.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm trying to keep my audience straightened
okay.
out here.
Okay, I'm confused then. Go ahead.
No. Okay, was the issue of the sufficiency of the evidence of there being a sexual assault ever addressed in any appeal?
There was no complaint that the evidence was insufficient.
I saw nothing about it either.
There was absolutely no complaint that the evidence was insufficient.
Neither the trial lawyer raised this issue, mm-hmm. nor the appellate lawyers when they had the opportunity, which would have been in the writ appeal.
Correct. Nor the habeas lawyers.
This issue was never raised. I don't think Mr. Rodriguez, has had a full hearing.
The other thing that's not been raised is there was evidence that she was working with the feds on a kidnapping ring. I mean,
that would be another motivation.
Well,
bunch of people involved. It was counterfeiting. It was a counterfeiting ring. You got a bunch of counterfeiters out there.
A witness working with the feds.
Yeah, but then we do have Mr. Rodriguez saying, "Well, I bought the suitcase and carried her to the landfill."
Before he said that, they already made it a capital offense and charged him with a capital murder.
But, you know, that's guilt or innocence. That is not punishment. Is it?
What's guilt or innocence?
Whether or not there are other suspects in the crime, which has been resolved by the suitcase
in
the landfill.
Well, you're right. That is guilt
or innocence. And that gets there, doesn't it, Larry?
Yeah, it does. You're talking about the body in the suitcase.
Yeah,
We're talking about the Summer Baldwin body.
So that brings us back.
Because there was another body in the suitcase.
Okay, another body in another suitcase.
Right.
Okay, there were a couple of bodies in a couple of suitcases, maybe the same landfill.
Definitely in the same Lubbock.
All right. Excuse me, because you know I'm the only non-lawyer in this room, so I have every right to be the dumbest person here, but I do not hear the sufficiency element of sexual assault murder.
What I'm saying.
Ever being heard in this case before a court of law. We can discuss it until the cows come home, but that doesn't make any difference. They're killing him right now.
Yes.
And the other thing that was brought up, and I don't understand, wasn't granted, a change of venue out of Lubbock. It seems to me that this case would be all over the news. It seems to be that a change of venue out of Lubbock.
Was it requested?
Yeah.
I never saw anything about a change of venue, so you're going to have to tell me about that.
It was denied.
So there would have been news coverage about this, which a large percentage, you know, I don't think people in Lubbock have a great deal more to do than sit around and watch crime stories on television.
Okay, now I'll have to admit that I haven't read all available materials on this case, but one of the sources that I read did say that the trial court granted a change of venue. Because of the publicity surrounding the search for Rogers' body.
Where was the case tried?
In March of 2008, and the parties proceeded to trial. But where specifically the case was tried, again, this is just one source that says that a change of venue was granted.
You're on the same page.
I read the opposite.
You're on the same page. They are.
This is the opposite.
The trial court granted a change of venue, yeah.
Because of publicity regarding the Rogers murder, not the Summer Baldwin murder.
Because the Rogers murder
was going to be used in punishment.
Where you would use that. Mm-hmm. But then they absolved him of guilt in that in order to get a statement.
On the Baldwin murder.
They gave him immunity from that. As part of the plea deal.
Oh, okay.
But then
it became coitus interruptus, and that never happened.
Correct.
All bets are off once the deal falls apart.
The deal unraveled.
Right.
Well, it is 45 minutes after the hour, and we have not had any word of the victims crossing the road back to that has not come. Okay. Okay, 45 minutes. Now, let me tell you, the amazing thing is that two-thirds of you listening to this show will actually hear it tomorrow because you get it off the internet in the archive. And we're 45 minutes after the witness crossed the road. It does not take that long to execute anyone. We have a problem with the chemicals in Texas. They are beyond the date of their shelf life, and they do not work effectively. Oh, they ultimately work. But while the delay is going on, the person being executed writhes in the gurney, suffering from poison's effects without there being enough poison to kill them. You run into the same problem in Florida recently, where after the execution, the person being executed had to get up and wait another occasion to be executed. And that is because the states, various states in the United States, have difficulty finding shelf life ready execution chemicals. So they're using chemicals that have deteriorated in their vials. And that is causing unnecessary human suffering. A recent Justice Stevens, former Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, crossed my transom this morning because he came out suggesting that we needed to repeal the Second Amendment. After he retired, he also thought we needed to stop executions. I know Justice Stevens. I met him when he came to Houston because he was a decider at the Supreme Court on Hill versus Houston, my case. And I was back in line at a shindig with all these Vincent Elkins and Baker Botts lawyers in front of me in line, and Justice Stevens left the receiving point and came back and said, "You're Raymond Hill?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Hill versus Houston was a very fun case for us." And we laughed and talked about that while all those rich lawyers who had come there to impress somebody that they'd actually shaped Justice Stevens' hands suffered. Stevens was right. We need to stop the killing. And if for no other reason, we cannot do so humanely. Florida and Alabama have just passed laws that will allow them to gas people to death with nitrogen and gas chambers. Texas has no such law, so we have to keep killing them even though the chemicals we use are out of date. I apologize to the listeners for being so graphic in that description, but it's true. And I, though the lawyers here seem to be of mixed feelings, do not think that Mr. Rodriguez III had a sufficient hearing on the issue of whether his case qualified as a capital case because of the sexual assault. I will grant you that I may be wrong. It may have been a sexual assault. It certainly was a brutal occasion. But it may have been a sexual assault, and it may have gotten out of hand, and a murder may have happened. And that would make it a capital case. But I think, as one of the lawyers suggested, the DA was fishing for an excuse to kill a man who didn't accept a life without parole plea. That's pretty serious business in my mind. And I may be wrong. There may have been a sexual assault. And if there was, that qualified this for a capital case under Texas law. But what if there wasn't? It looks like a court of law needed to hear the evidence of the assault to reach the criteria of being a capital case. Mike, am I too far off base?
No, more than that, it seems to me that what made it a death penalty case was the second killing of the fetus, the pictures of the fetus, and when they went on direct appeal, the state abandoned fighting that. They didn't even fight it in direct appeal. So they were admitting that they had no grounds. How much that affected, you can't take both claims and try them on both and say one isn't any good, is a death penalty on the first. If the jury only heard about the first murder and there's evidence that she was a prostitute, her body had crack cocaine into it, they might not have found a death penalty. The death penalty, I believe, was found because of the fetus and because of pictures of the fetus and the fact that the state conceded that issue on appeal and didn't even fight it, that tells me it was all bogus, that it was nothing but decorations to get the death penalty.
So the prosecutor and maybe some defense lawyers were not too pleased with the rejection of an appeal.
But the question is, shouldn't it be retried even if he was found guilty on the original murder? Shouldn't it be retried on the issue, is he a future danger? I mean, they give you a different image of a man who kills a woman and an unborn baby compared to a man who kills a prostitute. It might not have been.
Okay, excuse me, Mike. I just received word from the producer that the witnesses have across the road at 6:52. That's too long. That indicates to me there was some suffering. Well, what happened to the body now? Is Karn's Funeral Services will pick up the body at the Walds in Huntsville and carry it to a nearby church so the family can go over and touch the body while it still has warmth in it. And then it will be sent to funeral preparation in South Houston and returned to Huntsville unless the family picks it up there, the body up there. Bodies in Texas are property, and they go to next of kin kind of folks. But you have to pay to get a body back from Texas Department of Criminal Justice. You have to pay for the funeral services to get it. And if nobody picks up the body, it'll return to the Joe Bird Cemetery called Peckerwood Hill in Huntsville. And I suggest the next time you're making a tour of Greater Huntsville, you swing by there. It's just north of town. You go past the Gopher Bowl, which is the stadium for Sam Houston State University, and it's after the next intersection. Well, this has not been an easy case.
No, there's something I like to say. I was approached by a lady recently who works for TDC, and she told me, because she knows what we do here, and she told me her job in TDC was to fill out the death certificate of the condemned inmates. And she asked me a question, which I didn't have the answer to. She said, why did they make me put as cause of death murder?
Because it is a homicide.
I'm saying, but when the clerk in TDC has to ask me, why is it murder? This is the case that I'll now tell her why it's murder.
That is it murder, Mike, or just homicide? Cause of death being homicide.
I might be paraphrasing.
Okay.
I might be paraphrasing.
It is a homicide.
It is homicide.
It is a homicide.
Death at the hands of another person is
a
homicide.
It's a homicide.
I might be misquoting that. That might be what she told me. I could still consider it murder.
Yeah, there's no other phrase you can put in there. Execution is not considered classic cause of death, but homicide is.
And it is a homicide.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's a homicide.
Well,
and this, Yannick, you got any closing?
It is the cause of death is refusing.
No, you
a plea
want to get away from this one, huh?
The cause of death is refusing a plea bargain.
Cause of death may be refusing a plea bargain. Well, I want to tell you that my name is Ray Hill, and I am the host of Execution Watch here on radio station KPFT in Houston. I welcome you, whether you listen to it in broadcast over the 90.1 signal broadcast here in Houston, or whether you listen to it streamed live on kpft.org or executionwatch.org. We do not enjoy doing these shows, but we think there's a journalistic responsibility for somebody to shine a light on what is going on in your name in a Texas prison in Huntsville. Our next scheduled execution is on April the 25th. Eric Davila is scheduled to be executed. He may get a stay. We hope he does, but if he does not, we will be here at 6 p.m. on April the 25th. Our executive producer is Elizabeth Stein, who works very hard to put this together and makes it work. On the board, we have Robert. Robert, thank you very much. Bob, for doing our finger work. Bob Gartner is in there. The lawyers on this show were Larry Douglas, who did the bulletin, and Michael Gillespie, who carried the lead in research in this story. Jack Lee took a waiver at the last minute and failed to show up, but he is leading for Eric Davila, so I expect to see him in studio. Go to work, Jack. And Paige Yannick. And I thought they did a remarkable job filling an hour with information from a case that we thought we wouldn't make it till the end of hour with things to say, but by God, we did. And that's what radio is all about. Radio starts on time and ends on time. And our show starts and ends with Victoria Panetti. Her brother is on death row with a serious mental condition. And here is her music. You can find out more about her on She Monster International. MySpace. She Monster. My name is Ray Hill. Thank you for listening. I'm gathering the paperwork for archives. And we will be back sometimes near the end of next month.
Where money go? People of Texas, don't you know? Some accused are innocent. Some get good lawyers, most don't. State of Texas, killing machine.
Don't you know they're killing?